Hi, you. It's Wendy again. I'm really happy to be back here preparing another episode of the Show Up or Shut Up podcast for you to listen to. And before I get into it, I just want to say that Black Friday and Cyber Monday are about to descend on us. And I've been thinking a lot about it. And, you know, obviously, if you know me a little bit, you know, I'm like hemming and hawing over whether or not I should participate in this. And I am feeling the pressure to do it. And like that I would be crazy not to. And even given all of my reservations about all of this kind of stuff, I just have a feeling that I am going to do it. So if you're interested and you're looking for those kind of Black Friday deals on online classes, then please go sign up to my newsletter, because that's where I'm going to be giving people the information about how to access my Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales, or at least I will be giving them the access to the best of it. So if you want to be an insider and you want the best of that, then please go to willowanders.com, willowanders.com, and put yourself on my newsletter list as soon as possible, and you'll get the best deals. And that's it. Here's the episode. Hope you enjoy it. I think you will. Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up with Wendy Solganic, also known as willa.wanders on Instagram. This podcast features real and raw conversation about the lives of prolific makers. What is really happening behind all of those gorgeous photos of art on Instagram? How we came to be prolific makers? What makes us consistently show up? And the very real challenges that we all face. This episode of Show Up or Shut Up is brought to you by the Willa Workshops found at willowanders.com. Take a class in how to make your own Willa journals, have fun with a secret tag book, or enroll in our new 12-month mixed media art making experience called Fodder School. These and many more outstanding online courses are available right now on my website. Hello, Ricky.
Hi, Wendy.
Welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I am really excited to have you on because I am very intrigued by you.
That's good, I guess.
All right, are you ready to roll?
I'm ready.
All right. So, Ricky, the first thing I want to know is, where are you from? Where do you live now? And how do people find you on Instagram? Because that's primarily where people should be looking right now as they listen to this, to just see who you are and what you do, so that everything we talk about can be like in context.
Sure. So I'm in, well, close to Tucson, Arizona right now. I grew up in the Midwest, Minnesota area, but now I'm in the desert. And on Instagram, you can find me at Ricky, R-I-C-K-I underscore Tiki, T-I-C-K-I underscore Tavy, T-A-V-Y.
Did you love that? Was it a show or a movie, Ricky, Tiki, Tavy? Did you love that when you were a kid?
You know what? It's funny. I actually didn't really know about it. So when I was younger, like elementary school, there was a book that was read in school, and it was called Tiki Tiki Tembo. And it was a story about a little boy that had a really long name. It was Tiki Tiki Tembo, No Saw Rembo, Cherry Berry Ruchi, Pip Perry Pembo. And I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
I remember it too. Like, it was a big deal in the 70s.
Yeah, right? So somewhere along the line, that morphed into the other story of Ricky Tiki Tavy. And so my mom used to call me Ricky Ticky Tavi as just like
A nickname.
a pet name. Yeah. So I don't know how the two got combined, but anyway, that's how it became my
So
Instagram name.
for some reason, I feel like that story, one of those stories, scared me a little because there was a snake involved. Was there not a
Yeah,
snake involved?
there was. Yeah, I think. I mean, okay, to be perfectly honest, I haven't read the Ricky Ticky Tavi, but it's something about a mongoose and a snake.
Yes. Oh God.
Yeah. And I don't do snakes,
And it's,
so.
I don't do snakes either. And I don't know if my fear of snakes came from that or I had a fear of snakes before that, but something about it's a scary story for kids, I feel like. Oh, the something happens at night when they're sleeping. I just all coming back to me now. Okay. All right, but your name is super cute on Instagram. That's a great like Instagram name.
Thank you.
So tell us how you got involved in art and then also how you got involved in mixed media.
Yeah, that's so I knew you were gonna ask that, and I was trying to remember how. I feel like I've just been creating as long as I can remember. I can remember being like maybe 5 or 6 years old and making greeting cards and selling them to my mom like 10 cents or something. I don't remember, but that's one of my earliest memories. And I can remember like she bought the first one and I was thinking, I need to make more. And that's where it began. But and it's just kind of I've dabbled in everything from sewing. I used to make primitive dolls, and then I painted like wood plaques, and I was actually looking back at Etsy to see what the first thing I ever sold online was, and I made like play food out of felt, and then I did soldered jewelry, and I don't know, like it's just like I see something and I think, I wonder if I can do that, and so I try it, and
Well, so what I'm hearing from you is that there is an innate connection with making and
yeah.
selling, because not only did you think you were 5 years old, I want to see if I can make those greeting cards, but it was immediately somehow instinctively for you connected to like production art
I
and
know.
the economy.
It's so weird.
Well, I'm the same way. So
Are
it's
you?
not weird. I just think that certain people are more drawn toward, there's, I guess there's some people who are just makers and it's like they have no interest in selling and it's just not part of
Right.
who they are. And then some people like you and I love that feeling of combining the two, like that feeling like I get to make a lot of stuff that I am having fun with. And at the end of the day, there is a commercial value in the quote unquote work that I'm doing. And then, of course, there's the artists who have other reasons where they want to express themselves. And it's very important for them to, express a story or express emotion to other people, which I'm not that. So I, that's why I reached out to you because there was something about what I saw in your Instagram that made me recognize myself. And I was like, oh, she's the next guest I want to have on. This is really intriguing. So, okay, so you've done many different kinds of crafting and arting. And before there was Etsy, were you selling at art fairs or how, like, were, it sounds like you probably were.
So my mom had a gift and antique shop for many years, and so I started making stuff to sell in her store. It was really cute, like it was a little log cabin and super nice. And so I started making stuff to sell in there, and I did that for several years. And then I did do art fairs. And then I had a coffee shop when we lived in Washington, and I kind of was looking at the walls and I was thinking, I need to get some artwork for sale in here. And that was, like I said, you know, I could do it. So I started making artwork to sell in my coffee shop. And yeah, so I've done all sorts of things.
It all makes sense to me. Okay. So have you ever gotten to that place where what you're making becomes profitable? Or like for some people, they can be makers and they're doing it for reasons other than that it truly is something that they can live on. So I'll just give an example so I don't sound like crazy. But back when I was in my early 20s, I was a production potter. And I analyzed the situation pretty quickly from the people around me that were also doing production art, that I could work full-time plus, you know, I could work like 50 to 60 hours a week. I could set up at art fairs, but at the end of the day, I wasn't really going to be getting more than like maybe minimum wage or less than minimum wage for all of the hours that I put into it. And I kind of started to understand like the dynamics of the economic side of crafting. And so I'm always sort of like aware of this thing, aware of people's value for their time and how they value themselves and how they value their time. And I know that there are people who produce amazing work, but they don't, they either don't demand, you know, their own value, or they don't understand how to get the value. So I'm just curious for you, because I see you doing these really cool projects and you're clearly making stuff, quote unquote, like in mass.
Right.
And is it something that you're like, I feel really good about, you know, how I am able to quote unquote capitalize on this? Like, it is profitable. I am making good money for my time. Or at the end of the day, do you feel like, look, I love what I do, and even if I'm really not quote unquote making money, it's okay too?
Well, I think it's a combination of those. You know, we're a little bit in the happy medium phase. For a really long time, I said some things to myself that were a little disparaging, like, well, my time's not really worth anything anyway. And yeah, that's really a bad manifestation. And it's really just been recent, probably the last 6 months or so. I used to say things like, well, my art will never pay the rent, but I really enjoy it. And I decided to stop saying that. I decided to start valuing myself more. And that's really changed the game for me. I, you know, I slowly have been raising my prices basically for that reason, because I'm valuing my time more and understanding that this is not sustainable if I can't get a fair price for it. Like, I do love making it, but if I can't get a fair price for it, I'm going to make one and give it to a friend and be done with it. And so, and, you know, and I've justified that to myself by saying, as I do become more prolific and I do have more experience, it's okay to give myself a raise here and there, because what I'm selling now is not what I was selling before. I'm constantly evolving and changing and getting better. And, you know, I think that that's important for artists to really value themselves. It's not okay to be disparaging to yourself. You have to value yourself if you want to be sustainable and do it long term.
I totally agree with you, because there's no way that people would continue at the pace that, let's say, you or I make art at and try to sell it if at the end of the day, you're like losing money, essentially.
Right. So
that's where it becomes unsustainable. You know, like, you're barely covering your costs, you're making way less than minimum wage.
kind of thing. So if people are not familiar with your work that you're making right now, let's just describe it for them so they can also put it into context. I know you sell handmade books, correct?
Right.
And journals, then journals, handmade journals. And I've seen recently these adorable pieces that you make, which you'll describe, that would be, I imagine, something that an art journaler would include in an art journal page, or maybe
like the scrappy tags, you mean?
Yeah. So can you explain a scrappy tag?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that all of my best-selling products come from me seeing a pile of leftovers going, I need to make something with that, because I just have a really hard time throwing anything away. I see value in everything. But at the same time, I'm kind of a minimalist, so I don't like having a lot of stuff around. So it's like I have these dueling personalities. And so I started making masterboards with just scraps of paper that I had laying around. And a masterboard is, if you don't know, I mean, you probably know, but if our listeners don't know, is just where you take scraps of paper and you use some sort of medium to put them onto a larger board, and then you can cut that down. And it's really fun to see what evolves out of that. And then I type quotes and I cut them up and put them on top of the masterboard. And then I sew colorful fabric to the end of it, so it becomes a tag. And they are really fun and super cute. But yeah, they're essentially made out of my leftovers, or that's how they developed. They're not really that anymore, because again, going back to the sustainability, it's like, I just don't have that many scraps. So now I'm making them intentionally.
They are adorable.
Thank you.
And when I see the photos on Instagram of you in production mode,
yeah,
I'm looking at them, and as a person who's been in business selling handmade things for a very long time, I really appreciate like the labor that goes into them,
yeah,
and number of steps involved, and not only that, the quality of the product that you're making. So
thank you.
You're welcome. It's like you're doing something that I'm just very familiar with. I ran a custom stationery business for 15 years.
Yeah. And
essentially what you are doing is basically what we were doing. And I got kind of lucky because I sold it in a very high-end market and in a very high-end way, because what I was making was considered fine stationery. So we could command basically top dollar for what we were making, and everything we were making was 100% custom. So people would place custom orders. So imagine if people came to you and they were like, I want those tags, but I want, you know, my font, my colors, my size, my shape, and all right. of that. And I want, you know, 300 of them. And then you quoted it for them, and then they would approve the quote, and then you went and you made those 300 things. So I appreciate what goes into a repeatable handmade product. It's a lot of labor.
It is. Yeah. It's a lot of hands-on. It's a lot of hours in the chair. And I tend to always underestimate how long it's going to take. Even now, after I've done how many hundreds of them, I'm like, oh, I could have this done by tomorrow. And then no, it's 3 days later. I'm still working on them. It's all good.
One of the things that we found in our business was that if at first something took a very long time that we wanted to produce, like let's say we came up with a style and we were like, this is hot, we want to make this, we want to put this out into the market, and we want people to like be able to purchase this from us, we always kind of had in the back of our mind that once we started producing it, that like luck would be on our side and we would figure out these tips and tricks that would make it so that it wouldn't take as long.
Right. And it does evolve. I mean, you know, I have found tips and tricks along the way. It seems like every time I do it, I find a different little thing and I'm like, oh, I should be doing it this way. That would be faster, or that would look better, or whatever. So yeah, it does evolve.
So you're having the exact same experience.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, so, you have to keep current, you know, you have to be able to, I'm just one person. So if I'm not smart about it, it would take me down.
Yes. So one thing that could happen to you is that it becomes so popular that you end up having an assistant in your studio.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
I know. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's a good point. And I have outsourced like some of the inking and stuff to my daughter, who's almost 17. And she makes more than I do per hour.
So, yeah, it's a little sad, right?
Like you're
more than your per hour.
Oh, but I'm not good at delegating though. So I have a really hard time with like letting go, because each piece is like, it's special to me. I have a really hard time letting go of control of, you know, delegating a task to someone.
Another thing that I noticed about the scrappy tags, is that what they're called? Scrappy tags?
Yeah, that's what I call them. Yeah. Okay.
Another thing that I noticed is that each one has a quote.
Right.
And I'm super duper like obsessed with quotes and lettering and like that's probably one of the reasons I'm so drawn to mixed media, is because the whole community is all about like, you know, combining words and art and inspirational quotes and meaningful things and all of that stuff. So where do you like talk to me about the quotes you choose, and when you make a production run of them, there's no way you're doing like everyone is a different quote. I mean, that would be impossible.
No.
How many of these are you making at a time? Hundreds or thousands?
Let's see. So when I first started doing it, like I said, it was literally like I did a handful of them and I didn't know what I was doing with them. I was using up scraps. And then they kept getting more and more popular. And then, bless her heart, Megan Wisner Quinlan posted them and like my whole feed just blew up, and which was so amazing and sweet of her to do that. But so yeah, then I think the last time I did it, I did 50 packs of 12. And so I was in the beginning hand typing them all, and I mean, I would sit for just days and my back would ache from typing quotes. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this and make people happy. You know, I'm going to burn out. So I did, I mean, just like last month was the first time I did it. I found a method of to type them originally and then use my laser printer and do a whole process there to make sure that they still look good. You know, I have a pretty high like they have to look good,
quality,
like quality threshold. I need things to look good. And even if like I know that other people don't see it, but if I see something that's a flaw, I'm like, nope, that's going in the reject pile. So yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but hundreds, basically, I guess, at this point.
That's a lot. But okay, well, this makes more sense, because I was still envisioning you hunched over a typewriter typing out all these things. And I was like, wow, is that a lot of labor?
Yeah, it was that method. And now I've resorted to the other method. But I do, now I won't have one this month. But typically once a month, I do a new release of a series. So I'll just have 12 different quotes for that series, if that makes sense.
Yes, that totally makes sense. So people know these are the quotes. You can buy the series of 12, the pack of 12.
Exactly.
So it's funny that you mentioned Megan. She has like, she's like a wizard almost, where if she puts her like her stamp of approval on
that, yeah.
Then it has the potential to grow exponentially.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's amazing. And I wonder, I definitely followed you before Megan gave it her stamp of approval.
Yeah.
But I do think that once she gave it her stamp of approval, I do think it piqued my interest differently. And I do think that there is like a psychological component really to everything. It's like we are herd animals and we are looking to each other for signals all the time, subconsciously.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't know if you've thought about this as far as marketing your tags and how much you want this whole thing to grow. Have you thought about, you know, I want to just keep it the size that it is. I'd like it to be a lot bigger. Have you thought of any of that?
Yeah, definitely. I think about it all the time. I don't really know where to go with it at this point, but, you know, just seeing the amount of growth that I've had, like I say, even in the last 6 months, I can tell that it's going to continue to evolve. And I just always trust that the next step will present itself. That step hasn't presented itself to me yet, but I have faith that it will. And it'll continue to grow because, you know, whatever it is, whether it's the tags or something else, I feel so much gratitude. Like I used to say luck, but I don't think it's luck. I just have gratitude for this journey. I love putting good stuff into the world. Like that's my whole goal, is to get as much good, happy, positive, affirming stuff into the world as I can. That's my goal at the end of the day.
So there's your like company mission statement right there. Like put stuff into the world. And it's just like everything emanates from that. It's like you ask yourself, okay, is this putting good stuff into the world? So something that just occurred to me is that like you can go to Target or you can go to Michael's or you can go to like AliExpress or these places. And it's not like mixed media attachment things are like, it's not like you've invented like, you know, the purchasing of like stickers or, you know what I'm talking about? These appliques, these three-dimensional appliques.
Right.
That's a thing, right? That's like that's a product. There's a category for that product. Even here, actually in Cleveland, Ohio, I actually have a friend who owns a manufacturing company that manufactures exactly that type of stuff for sale in Joanne and Michaels.
That's cool.
It's cool, but this is interesting. I'm much more intrigued by what you are making than buying a product that is truly mass produced in Asia.
Right. Well, that's, I think, where the art side of things comes in. You know, it's, I always kind of walk that line between crafting and art and what's the definition. And I still don't know, but the difference between walking into Michael's and picking something off the shelf versus buying it from an artist is that you know, that personal touch, and maybe not every occasion calls for that. So it's good that the other big box store manufactured item is there. But when you want something special, I think, you know, that you can't replicate that handmade feel and also the uniqueness, because I can tell you, I've made, you know, thousands of tags now at this point and no two are exactly the same.
So I think that's the defining thing. So when you said that you have this high standard for quality, it triggered something in my brain about the difference of the quality that you're talking about, the handmade quality versus the truly mass produced quality, where with true mass production, you cannot tell the difference between widget number one and widget number a million.
Right.
You know, if you've got good quality control in the factory. But what you're doing the nuances of the imperfections actually make that thing have an energy about it.
Yeah.
That makes me, and I know that I'm, you know, I'm not like, not everybody thinks the way I do, but I imagine everyone who listens to this podcast would think the same way, that it is those imperfections and those differences that actually make it the reason why I would buy from you and not purchase the same thing or something very similar at Michael's, or that maybe I purchase them both, but I value so much more highly the ones that I would purchase from you.
Right. And I think also, I mean, almost everything I make, I don't even say almost everything I make, I incorporate some sort of vintage paper or rescued paper product. So to me, that has an energy, like you're talking about the energy, that has an energy or a story with it as well. You know, it's, you can't mass produce that. Even if you copy it, no, this actual piece of paper has been around for 100 years. Like, you can't capture that mass producing.
So there it is. It's right there. It's the difference between the original old paper versus the scanned in, photocopied, printed on a, you know, HP Indigo printer, which you may not have ever heard of, but like, I'm talking about like the real, you know, high end digital printing equipment. It's that difference in the vibration of the thing. And I'm not, you know, I'm just thinking about the famous artists that have, you know, empires built on the mass manufacturer of things that look vintage. And I in no way want to disparage that, because clearly that's so much fun, and it has a value unto itself. But for the people that just for whatever reason are really like, there's just a, to me, like a difference in the original. It's again why we buy original tickets and not just photocopy tickets, or why for me creating my own paper, you know, that's decorated, which, you know, whatever, I call it collage fodder. There's a million names for it, but I'm not really looking to purchase other people's digital papers that then I print off on my inkjet printer. I really want to make my own.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge difference that I guess that I feel, you know, again, if you were selling original decorated paper, that would even be way more interesting to me than buying, you know, a $2 downloaded digital paper. I don't know why. I don't know. Do you feel, I mean, I think you do feel that difference, and it's probably one of the things that makes your product successful. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I'm just trying to figure out my own life, you know, why I do the things I do.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely a place for both things. I think I am amazed by digital artists that do all that stuff and make papers that people download. And I mean, I just think it's a whole different spectrum. It's not better or worse. It's just different. And for me, I'm kind of I don't want to say I'm a technophobe, but I'm definitely driving the struggle bus when it comes to technology. And I just feel like there's a tangible, you know, if I've got old papers in my hand, that excites me. That's what makes me tick. So, you know, something unique that isn't, I know 5,000 other people don't have it. To me, it's a value.
Okay, we have so many similarities, it's crazy. So I am also on that struggle bus with technology. It is so painful.
I know.
And I do try to navigate it, but it's always been very painful for me, even like just my whole entire professional career as a as a production artist with a production art company, I always had to have other people doing everything tech. I could never do any of it myself. And it's funny. I wonder if I was younger and I was able to do all the digital stuff, if I would feel really differently about the value of it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Maybe I'm devaluing it because in my own mind, it's inaccessible to me. So therefore, I'm like, I can't access myself creating digital things. I mean, I could. The funny thing is like, okay, Wendy, buy a scanner. You know, scan your art. But then I'm like, why? The fun is in the making of it. The fun is in the feeling the original thing with the paint and the gook on it. I don't know why something printed on a printer does not feel good in my hands.
I just think it's a different gift. You know, people who have that technology gift, it can be learned. I think the same can be said for art. There's people that I think everybody can do art, but not everybody's going to do art the same way. And, you know, with technology, there are people that have a real gift for it and it brings them joy. I'm not one of those people. I do not have that gift. And I just accept that and go, you know what? That's not my gift.
I think you're totally right. I think there are people who have that gift and they do wonderful things with it. And I didn't get that gift.
Yeah, that's okay. We have other gifts. That's
we have other gifts. Yeah. So, all right. So where do you see yourself in the next step? Looking out on, you know, what can people be sort of waiting for you to come out with so that they can hop on it?
I do have some things planned for the next year, and I don't want to give them away yet because I'm still developing them. So I never truly know what's coming next. I tell you, I really struggle sometimes. I'm like, well, I'm just going to be making the same thing again, I guess. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this idea will hit me and boom, there's a whole new product. And so, yes, I have some things planned, but there's also always things coming along that I just don't know, because it primarily the way I work in my studio, if you follow me for very long, you'll see that I get these amazing boxes of goodies from my mom. My mom lives in the Midwest and she goes to these estate sales and garage sales and thrift stores, and she's just amazing. And she totally gets me. So she'll send me these priority boxes full of random stuff. And then it's up to me to figure out how to use it. So the way I work is I'll just have a pile of stuff and I'll be like, well, I need to come up with something to make out of this. And so that's pretty much how new products are developed on my end. So I never really know exactly what it's going to be, but there is always something. And I always announce my sale dates ahead of time. So if you're following me on Instagram, you'll know when my next shop update will be.
So that is so cool that there's so many cool things about it. I just hope that a lot of people listen to this episode, because I think that what you're doing is a model. It's a possibility for people who love creating a lot of something and are they're looking for the answer to the question of why am I making all this stuff? So I just want to like analyze what you're doing in a way so that other artists can benefit from your experience. So the first thing that I'm hearing you say, which is so beautiful, is your business model allows you to grow and change and shift and release products with the materials that you have and the new exciting idea that you have.
Right. Yeah, I don't try to lock myself into a box.
Okay. The other thing that I'm hearing and just putting all these pieces together is, do you have any idea approximately how many Instagram followers you have?
I think just under 3,000.
Okay. So I think that's really important for people in this community to understand. You don't need 50,000 followers in order to have a successful business.
Yeah.
You need a small following of people who love what you do.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's a really good thing to bring up. I have 3,000 or a little less than 3,000 followers, but I don't, you know, I always block the spammy followers. And I really try to show up and engage with my audience because I feel such gratitude that they're there. And so I'm posting consistently. I try to post 3 times a day. I don't always meet that, but, and if somebody comments on my post, I always try to comment back because it means so much to me that they took the time to be there and to comment. So I think that's important. If you want to grow your audience, you really do need to be present.
Absolutely. An audience does not grow magically by itself. An audience is because of engagement. And basically, like, if you're posting on Instagram 3 times a day, you have earned the badge as like prolific maker. And in the height of like me growing my Instagram account and learning and being so excited, I would be posting 2 and 3 times a day. And I actually felt like, am I posting too much? I don't know if I'm really like doing this right. Cause I feel like I want to post all the time, but you're saying is like, you actually have a goal of posting 3 times a day.
I do. And I mean, how do I put this? I try to make it interesting. I also, for a long time, I felt the same way. Like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm posting too much. But I had to remember 2 things that, one, not everybody is going to see every post due to algorithms or how much they're scrolling or whatever. So they're not necessarily seeing all of my stuff. And secondly, if they don't like it, they can scroll past it or unfollow me. If I'm not their cup of tea, that's okay. I'm there for the people that do feel that connection. And that gets me an authentic audience. And that's what I really want. I don't care if I have 1 million followers. I would rather have 100 that are authentic. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, yeah. You are totally doing you in the way that is like, it is authentic is the best word for it. It's like, you're prolific and therefore posting 3 times a day is not super hard for you. So other people might hear that and it might stress them out, right? It might be like, oh my gosh, now I'm not only am I supposed to post once a day, now Ricky's posting 3 times a day. And what I want people to know is, don't listen to what we're doing.
No.
Be authentic to your life and your process, and the people who like you and like what you do, they will find you and they will stick around.
Exactly. That's perfectly said. Yes, I couldn't agree more.
So how do you feel about changes to Instagram when they happen, which they happen regularly? So like the recent thing was, now we're supposed to be making reels. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
To be perfectly honest, I really don't pay that much attention. I know changes happen and sometimes they affect me. I really just kind of am over here in my little happy bubble doing my thing. And I'm like, I don't strive to meet the algorithm. I did for a while. Like, I was like, oh, I suppose I should pay attention to this. And I just decided, you know what? What's meant to be will be. And the people who need to find me will find me. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm comfortable with. And whatever they decide to do, that's, you know, whatever Instagram decides to do, as long as they don't, shut me down or something. That I just let it be. I don't really pay attention.
I love that. Okay. Can you describe your day-to-day life as a prolific maker? Because it sounds like you really are working. I don't mean working in like a negative way, like,
yeah,
but I mean, it sounds like you are really, you're not just doing this casually. Like, you really, right. my hunch is you're kind of doing this full time. So can you explain the reality of what you have going on?
Yeah. I probably work more than full time. But the trade-off is that I really love what I'm doing. And I've even tried to force myself to stop at like 6 o'clock and not do it anymore for the rest of the night. And I just feel lost because I just want to be in my art room doing my thing. So I'm usually in my art room by 8 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 9 o'clock. But I get up early, usually by 6:30, I'm up and, you know, I just do all my morning stuff and try and do a couple things, household chores type things. And then I'm in the art room and it's kind of hard to get me out of there. But that being said, you know, I have a family and household to run. So the thing I love about what I do is that it's extremely flexible and I can just, you know, if somebody needs me to do something, I can drop everything and go do it. Or, you know, if I need to run and pick up groceries, then I don't have to reschedule anything for that. And it's very accommodating. So I don't know. I don't like clock in and clock out. I don't know how many hours I actually spend, but the time in my art room is just non-existent. Like, I spend all day in there, but I feel like it's been 15 minutes. It's just weird. And then I usually stop around 5 o'clock and make dinner. And then after dinner, I just go back in there and do some more. But it's not always production. Sometimes it's, you know, working in my personal journal or, you know, other like gifts or something like that. So it's not always production, but this room is definitely my happy place. And I do spend a lot of hours in the chair.
Would we typically find you in there, not just Monday through Friday, but also Saturday and Sunday? Like, there's no separation of like week and weekend. There's just making and not making.
You're exactly right. Yeah. I have a hard time sometimes remembering what day of the week it is. I usually remember what day of the week it is by what other people in my family have going on. So it's just another day.
It's just another day. Okay. So one of the things that I've become acutely aware of is that many, many, many years ago, there arose kind of a term that I know that I was very intrigued by, and I've thought a lot about more recently than even when I first kind of heard of the term. But it's this term of like art every day or everyday art.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've just recently really come to understand is that there are people who like to create things. There are people who want to create things, but for some reason, maybe they work a full-time job outside of the home, or they just aren't people who are like you or I. Like, I'm very much like you. There's no days of the week. 7 days a week, I'm making stuff. I stop to cook a meal if I have to, but yeah. There's nothing about what I do that makes it that I have to force myself to go make art.
Mm-hmm.
And what actually kind of like breaks my heart a little is when I hear people who feel that they quote unquote should be making more art. And it's just something that I wonder a lot about is, like, I don't ever have to force myself to go into my art studio. My art studio, like, calls me, and it's like a siren. I have to force myself to go out of it and make dinner.
Right.
So, but I do, I feel bad that we, like people like you or I, we somehow make it so that other people might feel some kind of bad way that they're not making enough art. But what I really want people to know is this is my natural habitat. I don't ever have to pressure myself or force myself to go make more art. And I don't want other people to look at how much art I make and feel like they're doing it wrong and they have to pressure themselves to make more art. So have you ever thought or kind of gotten a feeling like that there are groups of people who maybe see you and they feel bad that they don't make enough art, or are you totally oblivious to this phenomenon?
No, I have people that say, I wish I could be like you. And I always respond with, please don't be like me. Please be you. Because I very, very strongly believe that everybody has a gift. And so this is my gift right now in this season of my life. It doesn't mean that this is always going to be my gift. And everybody has seasons and everybody has gifts. And knowing yourself is the most powerful tool you have. So maybe my, you know, for me, it's making prolific art. But there is every aspect of your life that can be artful. You can do everything artfully. So if you're wanting to cook, I don't like cooking at all. It's not my gift. I can do it. I can do it well. I don't enjoy it. But some people, they love it. Embrace that. That's your gift. That's your art. You can do that. And I don't, you know, even, you know, I want to say, like, if you're, you have an office job, so make that your art, you know, do things with love and care and like you mean it. And it is, that is an art. Do you know what I'm saying?
I kind of know what you're saying, but I'm kind of also thinking a lot about, again, this pressure to be creative and make everything creative, make everything special. Yeah. Like, I wonder if that too is just a grind. It's like, I don't know. I ask a lot of questions. I don't necessarily have a lot of answers, but I can't stop thinking and wondering about the pressures that we all put on ourselves.
Right. I think, like I say, like knowing yourself is so important. So if you feel pressure about something, don't do it. Like, don't worry about it. You don't have to be creative. There's no rule book. You do you, whatever makes you feel like you're living your best life, do that.
So I 100% am behind that message that, like, people have to figure out what is the best things for them, uses of their time, balance in their life, and that looking to how other people, which is so natural, right? Like, we're on social media, we have a window into each other's worlds like we've never had before.
Right.
And the urge to compare ourselves in every way to everyone that we're coming in contact with is just a very natural urge.
Right.
And yeah,
don't do that.
Don't do that. Exactly. It's so hard not to, because we actually, I think, have to fight our instincts to not compare ourselves.
Yeah.
Because that animalistic part of us is comparing ourselves to others, because that is how we evolved and that's how we survived. I'm like a big believer in evolutionary psychology.
So, and interestingly, I mean, I don't know how this all fits in, but when you think about, like, the school system and the grading system, that kind of set us up for comparing ourselves. But I really feel like the ultimate gift is to figure yourself out and understand that you're unique, that you, there's no reason for you to compare yourself to anybody because you're not going to be somebody else. That's not the goal. The goal is to be you and like to really have the strength to stand on your own, to be yourself and say, yeah, that's not me. I can appreciate that about you, but that's not me.
That is so beautiful. The goal is to be you. That's it. To figure yourself out, what feels good to you, what works for you, and this comparison thing that we're all doing. And there's a whole other like side to this thing, which is, it's just, again, it's part of how human beings are wired. There's no way that we're going to escape this, but marketing and sales of things to each other, mm-hmm. as an element of it, which just is natural to marketing, which is, I have found what works for me and it's XYZ. And therefore, I am going to explain that on social media. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, maybe that thing is making art every day. So it's like, it's a very natural thing to promote that concept. And then for other people to very naturally compare themselves to that and then feel that, oh, maybe I should be doing that too. So I love that you have got this figured out. And I love that I could, like, I was so intrigued by what you were making. I had no idea that this was where the conversation was going to lead.
Yeah.
But that you've got it figured out. And I just, I feel for whatever reason that it's very important to say out loud that, you know, just because I am prolific naturally, and that's my happy place, that I really don't want other people to feel bad or pressured. It makes me feel bad if I think that me living my best life would hurt other people, I guess is what's going on at the end of the day. I just, yeah. Social media just kind of sucks in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, how do I say this? So I went through a transition over the last 4 or 5 years. My daughter in her early teens got anorexia, and we had a very long healing process. And in that, my eyes were opened to, like you say, the amount of comparison that happens in this world. And it's very much, I think, diet culture and what we're sold every day of trying to all be the same. And it translated to me into all corners of my life, including my art. And I can't express enough how strongly I feel that individuality is the thing. That is the goal. Like finding yourself and holding strong to those boundaries and just being like, this is who I am, and being proud of that, and supporting other people who have found who they are and being proud of them for that, and not saying I need to be that, just be happy for them. And you know, for me, that evolved, that it came over time. And that would be like my wish for everybody, is to just really find who you are and be proud of that. And don't compare yourself to anyone. There's no one you're supposed to be like. You're supposed to be you.
I don't know if you know this, Ricky, but we were meant to have this conversation because I had atypical anorexia.
Wow.
And I have children, and my atypical anorexia created a home environment that obviously, you know, when you raise children with a mother who is deep into an eating disorder is going to completely affect her children. And it's a long story, not for today, but to say that I completely and totally am with you.
Yeah.
I was awoken from my eating disordered, anorexic, diet culture fixation on my physical body and perfecting it and being something that I was never designed to be.
Right.
I was awoken from this, and it was only because I was awoken from it that I was able to return to who I am, which is a prolific maker. So during the time where I was deepest into my eating disorder, I had no energy or creativity really to do the things that I was put on this earth to do, because I spent all of my time, energy, and effort trying to make myself smaller.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a monster. It robs you of your life.
It was a thief. Do you by any chance listen to that podcast called, oh my gosh, it's Christy Harrington, and she calls dieting the life thief?
No, I'm really new to podcasts, so I've found myself like subscribing to all these new podcasts. So I don't know a lot of them.
Her podcast is called Food Psych. So it's food and then psych, PSYCHE.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
I'm writing it down.
Okay. It was through being introduced to her podcast, which I realize now, like, all the original episodes are no longer available on like iTunes. You have to kind of like pay to get the original episodes, but I don't even think you need the original episodes. She's just such a prolific podcaster. And she wrote a book, which what is the name of her book? I'm sorry. My brain does not work that well anymore, but her name is Christy. She has a podcast called Food Psych. And it was through listening to that, that I was totally woken up to my own anorexia.
Wow.
And I went through a process of unwinding where I've been, how I was conditioned in my life by my parents, by the culture, by the society that I lived in. And it took a long time.
Yeah. And
after unconditioning myself for a while, I mean, it's probably going to be a lifelong process to totally unwind it. But after a little while, that's when I picked back up a pen and a paintbrush. And I would never have been able to really truly do me if I had been stuck in my eating disorder.
Wow. That's amazing.
So,
and isn't it amazing how once you see diet culture, you can't unsee it? You just see it everywhere. And you're like, wow, this is so ingrained in our culture. We didn't, like, before my daughter's eating disorder, I didn't see half of what I see now. And now I just, it's like glaring red lights on everything.
On everything. I mean, I think it's beyond like we don't even see it. We've even bought into it, right? It's right. Like I was one of the biggest propagators of diet culture that was out there, because I hated myself so much that my whole life became basically dedicated to how could I shrink my body. And in order to do that, my whole life had to become about that thing. And it was what people knew me for. And I had a blog and a podcast. And I was so deeply, deeply involved in all of that.
Yeah.
And I was like basically perpetrating harm on other people as I was just trying to figure out my own like way of feeling loved and fitting in.
Yeah.
Because ultimately
it's out there. Yeah. It's everywhere. And if that's all you know, or that's what, you know, as you know, when you have an eating disorder, your brain is consumed and you have this voice telling you that this is what you need to do to be loved. The flip side is that it'll never be satisfied until you're dead. But, you know, you want other people to join you because you think you're telling the best truth, you know? And
well, I think this is how to be a good girl. It's like,
yeah,
if I'm going to be a good person, then I need to fit the model of what a good person looks like, which is, you know, essentially like a thin person, a young person. Right. I mean, you could put this on anything. It's like the proliferation of, you know, people Botoxing their face to high heaven so that their skin never gets wrinkles. It's just, it's never ending. And the unfortunate thing is the process of being a human, it only ends in you getting old.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. So like, you could spend all of your good energy trying to fight nature, or you could just learn to accept yourself and do you.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, my message is always, like I said, that experience changed my outlook on everything. And, you know, I understood all of a sudden very clearly that we're not promised tomorrow. And any little bit of goodness that I can put into the world is goodness that wasn't there before. And that's every day what I show up to try to do.
Well, that is really moving. And I think that that's a beautiful thing for us to end this conversation on. I really appreciate you having the willingness to come on and have this, you know, conversation with me, which you didn't know, you know, neither of us knew where it was going to go. Do you have anything else that you want to share with the people who listen before we say goodbye for today?
You know, just do you, just keep being you, keep learning about yourself and what makes you tick and what makes you happy. Definitely don't compare yourself to anybody else. Just keep showing up and being you and being proud of who that is. And yeah, that's it.
Well, I'm so glad I asked you to come on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I feel a connection to you that is just going to flourish. Yeah. So thank you so much. And I hope everyone follows you on Etsy, which is a thing that people can do. Oh, so how do people find you on Etsy?
On Etsy, I am the Bricolage Factory. Bricolage is Bricolage. But if you go to my Instagram, there's a link tree in my profile. It'll take you right over there.
Perfect. Is there anything else in that link tree that you want to, you know, let people know about that might be interesting to them?
Not really. I mean, I have a YouTube channel, but it's basically just me reposting things from my IGTV. So it's not that I don't focus on it. My main focus is really Instagram. That's where I do my most communication through. So
awesome. Well, I really thank you for coming on. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and I'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Wendy.
You're welcome. Bye, Ricky.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Show Up or Shut Up. If you've made some art or craft while you listened, take a photo of it, post it to Instagram, and tag me at willa.wanders so we can see what you are up to. And if you feel like what we've talked about here spoke to you, press that subscribe button so that you're the first to know about all of the new Show Up or Shut Up episodes. Have a wonderful day and go make something.